Welcome back, everyone. We are talking with Frodorex about the secret war within Freemasonry, and we're going to pick up our conversation. Very interesting one. I wanted to ask you quickly here a little bit about Albert Pike and some of the validity in terms of some of the things that we've heard about him. First of all, his letter between Giuseppe Mazzini and Albert Pike, World War III, you know the story. Any validity to that at all?
I think there is. I've got several books right now that are totally limited edition. These books were not even supposed to be reprinted. There were special instructions on Albert Pike's death to have some of these plates destroyed so that they wouldn't be reproduced. But the Scottish Rite Supreme Council ended up reproducing them anyways after his death. And I got my hands on a couple copies of these books, which have no author, no, you know, there's no copyright, no printing. It just, you know, you don't know who wrote it. But I'm pretty sure it's got Albert Pike's words, because I've laid it next to the Morals and Dogma, and it just fits right in. And in these books, he clearly states that the Scottish Rite is trying to establish a new religion in which they would be the hierarchical control of it. And if you look at the organizational structure of the Scottish Rite, it truly is papist in nature, as in it has a pyramid totalitarian hierarchical structure with a venerable master at the head who has supreme and complete authority, and it's governed by a college of cardinals, but they call them the Supreme Council, but they're basically just like the College of Cardinals in the Vatican. And he puts down the blueprint of creating a world religion in which the Scottish Rite Supreme Council would be the royal priesthood within.
Huh. I mean, if you ask the Christian conspiracy community, if we can call them that, then in their view, Freemasonry is like a complete satanic, you know, mind control operation with all, you know, pagan stuff, and you know Masons control everything, etc. And it's all about the creation of a kind of a new age religion in that sense. What do you make about some of those comments? And you know, with your background being involved in Masonry and everything else.
Well, I used to completely dismiss it out of hand right away. I mean, well, at first I used to think it was all true when I was completely buying the conspiracy theories. Then I started to research, started to get a different idea, and I thought, well, it's all fake. It dismissed it out of hand. And then I joined the lodges and joined the different orders, and I started to experience it from a different perspective. And I realized that I believe now that what we've got here is a case of mistaken identity. I think a lot of times when they're making those references to different nefarious acts and deeds within the Freemasonic lodges, they're really referring to the extra numerary degrees and orders like the Scottish Rite and their members who are doing things in the name of Freemasonry and letting Freemasonry take the rap as the outer, you know, buffer, where the rubber meets the road. And meanwhile, their order, which nobody even knows exists, continues business as usual from within, unmolested by criticism or oversight. You know, that's a big part of it. Huh. The other thing is, but here's the other thing. I now start considering what I mentioned last hour about the idea of, autonomous disembodied spirit entities.
Yep.
I'm now starting to think that maybe there's some truth to this, that maybe in fact that the ritual has been modified just enough to emulate some of these, you know, ceremonies of invocation that would bring, you know, these entities. Because if people look up a term, if you just type in a term on the internet, it's egregore. It's E-G-R-E-G-O-R or G-O-R-E. That term, if you type that in, and the first Wikipedia that comes up, and just read what it says. It's really remarkable. What it talks about is the idea of a thought being formed around a group of human beings who all engage in repetitive practice over time. So you do a thing over and over again in the same spot, the same time, over and over again, and after a while, this theory is that a thought being will actually form, be attracted and drawn to the event, and then take on the life of that event. And there's even a connection in the Wikipedia entry, a connection to the Watchers and the Nephilim. Huh. And the connection that I would make, that I would speculate, is if you look in the Book of Enoch, it says in the one translation that I have, it says that when the Nephilim were destroyed by the flood, their spirits could not leave the earth because they were part human and part divine.
Yeah.
So even though they died in the human, in the physical form, their spirits lived on, but they were disembodied and attached to the earth. And I would posit to you that therein lies the lore about all demonic and evil spirits that have haunted humanity ever since.
You have some interesting connections there as well, of course, with the tulpas, you know, thought forms or how you create that kind of stuff. But I think that there is another kind of group, I don't know if it's a group really, but Fraternatis Saturni, whatever his name is.
Yeah, the Brotherhood of Saturn.
Yeah. And this is more, of course, an official kind of version, if you will, of the Brotherhood of Saturn. And that could be, you know, partially what we've talked about the, you know, on the program about in the past as well. But this guy's, I think it's Gregory A. Gregorius or something like that. He's out of Germany, I believe.
Yeah, I've heard the name. I'm not as familiar with his work, but I've definitely heard reference.
Okay. Yeah, there's some interesting stuff there. But back to the entities here then. Is this something that you think would occur at the time as you have an initiate, for example, being joined into the lodge or something like that? And what are the risks? I mean, what are some of these initiatory people exposed to, do you think? Because it seems like they themselves don't know, of course. I've heard from people that say that, oh, the initiatory process is like the greatest thing in the world. I think I think Lamelou Duquette talked about that as well. It's like it's a great symbolic thing. But I mean, what you're saying is that they could be a danger to that, right?
Well, sure. I think that any activity poses some sort of danger and threat. I mean, there's any activity we engage in, the possibility of harm can come from walking out the
door. Sure.
Yeah. So that's just a given. But yeah, Lamelou Duquette, great friend. Talk with him often. Had him on my show many times. Man is so gifted in understanding about a lot of the more highfalutin esoteric ideas. He makes me feel, you know, humbled by his clarity and insights, you know. But I'll tell you, I do believe that there's a possibility of that. I think that it all depends on the intent of the group, and it all depends on tradition and how things have gone. The you know, a ritual can be modified, and an intent can be applied, whether one knows it or not. And if you have a group of individuals that are engaged in activity and they're deliberately trying to bring about a certain result, well, you know, my experience tells me that they're going to probably accomplish their goal if they're driven and focused. And so the question always remains the intent of the participants. Now, having said that, you know, it's really important, I think, to make this distinction and understanding. We're dealing with a set of tools here. It's the same toolbox. It's just different hands are reaching in for those tools. You take a hammer, you can beat someone to death with a hammer. But you can also build a house or a hospital or an orphanage or whatever. You know what I mean? Mm. So is the hammer evil?
No.
The hammer's a tool. But it can kill people. It can kill people, and it can also build structures. You know, so it's like there's a good and bad to the tool. It's just a matter of how you're going to apply it. I think that really applies to a lot of these occult and esoteric systems. And I think that what we found in our look at humans history going back at least for the last couple thousand years is that people have taken those tools and misapplied them over and over and over again. And that has made for misunderstanding and fear, which is completely justifiable. People are completely justified in being, you know, apprehensive and afraid because of the misuse that's been out there. But also be aware, there's been a program in place for a very long time to make us afraid of things that will empower us too. You know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, because in the end, you know, there are some tools that are useful. Whether they can be used for harm, they can also be used for good. And what I'm dealing with, what Lamelou Duquette's focused on, what I'm focused on, is the elevating of human consciousness, of the reawakening, the reactivation of the so-called shutdown DNA, you know, the gray, upgrade the gray matter, you know, and that's the idea from my perspective. And so magic defined by me is, you know, to cause change in consciousness in accordance with will, to cause change in consciousness in accordance with will.
Yeah.
As a distinction.
So there is, for one example, then there might be a danger, let's say, with a person that doesn't know what they're doing or what they're part of when it comes to, you know, initiation that they're agreeing to take part of. But at the same time, you have an intention, maybe on those behalf of running this initiation, where they might not, you know, have the best interest of this person at mind, and that's when you have a danger potentially then. But at the same time, you're saying that the knowledge overall, maybe not only in the ritual, of course, but in the lodge itself, within there are tools for your awakening of your spiritual body, if you will, and this can lead to a greater discovery and an upgrade, if you will, of yourself and you know progression of your life path, basically. So it's a dual thing going on here then. What was it like when you were going through some of these initiations? Did it feel dodgy to you or what?
Well, you know, there is a certain amount of dodginess, so to speak, as it were, because the entire climate of it is so disorienting. You know, when you go, for me, I joined a lodge of strangers. I didn't know anybody. So I walked into a building I didn't know, and I applied for membership and was taken.
It's amazing you wanted to do. It's amazing you wanted to do that.
Well, I mean, I'm a thrill seeker. You know, I mean, I've always been a sort of adventurous and brave in that way. You know, traveling across America, walking all over the place, hitchhiking and stuff. So it's not like it was seemed like just another adventure in that way. Also, I felt so well versed in the material, and I got to tell you, it was exactly as I had read it.
It was. Okay.
Yeah. So it was, everything was exact. So it really, I kind of knew what to expect, even though I didn't know that I knew.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was going to be that way. You know, you never know till the doors close, right? And the candles start burning. And so it's like, you know, the fact of the matter is, though, is that when you join a lodge, you go in, you basically hand yourself over to these brothers. And if you don't know anybody, you're handing yourself over to a stranger.
Jesus.
And, you know, you're being blindfolded. And you're being, you know, prepared and brought into a ritual space, and you know these different ceremonies and things are going on. So it's a disorienting and anxiety, you know, anxious experience in and of itself. That's part of the dramatos involved in shifting consciousness. Again, it only seems scary if you're suspecting the worst, right? But if you're in a situation like I was, where I was really trying to embrace the idea that this was a recapturing, a re-establishing of the mystery traditions within my own psyche, so I was really going into it fully open to the positive aspect of it. And so I think that really played a part in it being a positive experience for me. But I got to tell you, it was a little bit disappointing, really, because I felt like a lot of the people involved were just parroting the ritual, parroting the role, you know, just kind of going through the motions, and didn't feel like they were really into it or even understood the sacred impart of what we were doing here, you know. And I was going into it connecting to the long line of mystery traditions, going back to Plato and Socrates and Herodotus and, you know, Marcus Aurelius and all these guys, you know. And so I'm thinking in that real, you know, romantic notion of being in a long line of the mystic tie, the brotherhood of all these initiates going back to the time of, you know, ancient times. But in that way, it gave it greater meaning for me personally. But it wasn't, if anything, the only negative experience I can report to you was a little bit of disappointment in the, you know what I mean? And like sort of the unpreparedness of some people involved or the lack of enthusiasm in what they were doing.
Well, I mean, these are, the customs come from old initiatory cults. This is common in ancient cultures of facing death and reawakening, if you will. Common that, you know, boys of a certain age are, you know, taken into the cave and scared into manhood. You know, it's like, this is how it's been done in the past. But there have been cases, I know, there may be a handful or maybe there's more, but we don't know about them, but where people have been you know, murdered and accidents have happened, you know, loaded guns that weren't supposed to be loaded have gone off and people have been shot and stuff like that. So there's always that to it as well, right?
Sure. I know a couple of cases of the gunshots. What I can tell you is that none of the Blue Lodge rituals of Freemasonry have anything to do with guns.
Yeah.
That was obviously an extra order. That was an order outside of Freemasonry. One of those orders I talked about, the 600 to 800 appendant orders connected to Freemasonry. That was one of them. And, you know, so there again, we know it as a story of how somebody died in a Freemasonic ritual. But in fact, it's the story of how somebody died in a ritual in an order that only accepts Freemasons as members.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There's a big distinction there.
And how can, this is what, you know, it's kind of like, okay, I'm from Sweden, so there's about, you know, 7-8 million Swedes. Am I responsible for all those people and what they do and their actions? No. And
A huge point.
Yeah.
Henrik, that's a huge point. Somebody said that to me the other day. They said, or not the other day, but a couple months ago, they said to me, how can you still be a member of all those orders when you know that the people are doing bad stuff within them? I said, if I use that logic, I better quit every human organization I've ever belonged to or ever would belong to, because there's always going to be, you know, there's 1,000 bugs in the forest. 100 of them are lethal. Does that mean all bugs are bad? You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, that's the way it is. There's going to be a small percentage that are just going to do bad stuff. They just, no matter where they're at, no matter what they're doing. And another thing, just to kind of backtrack a little to the Christian that would say, you know, it's all rife with pagan rituals and being involved in all that. Let us not forget the origins of Christianity. You know, I mean, everything to do with the Christian mass, the Eucharist, everything to do with it is a pagan rite.
Yeah.
And you're doing it every week on Sunday in church. You know, it's just that you don't see that. You don't recognize that, but it's right there in front of you.
It's been purified through the God of, you know, the blood of God. And, you know, it's all good. Yeah.
So, I mean, with that in mind, sure. There are definitely bad people out there. They do bad stuff all the time. But if I, you know, I mean, and don't get me wrong, there have been times my knee-jerk reaction is to be like, no organization is good. I mean, I'm at the point now, I've already begun to demit, which means I've begun to withdraw from orders now that I've belonged to, because I see them as superfluous, as wasting my time and effort because they're not doing anything, you know?
Yeah.
And so if, from my perspective, I can't justify giving my time, energy, and money to things that are not productive. And then on top of it, there's my suspicions about some of the orders that I don't, you know, I'm not so sure where they stand. And so if I have that kind of doubt, I can't really give myself to a thing if I have that kind of doubt and feel like I'm being authentic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's my own personal honor.
Well, see, now you're not discrediting them out of hand because of something you do not know, but at the same time, you take the personal choice in the, and as your responsibility to say, all right, there's no point of me being part of this anymore. So I'm, you know, removing myself from it. And again, that's what I felt from the start as well, that I do not ever want to join something that I do not, you know what it is inherently to begin with. If it's closed off in those departments, just, you know, I'm not interested in it. I need to know what it is that I'm going into because of, you know, just the things that you mentioned previously, even with the, you know, Igori and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's like there are many deeper levels and people are involved in rituals where they might not even know or understand the implications and the, you know, spiritual significance of what they're doing. You're messing with some dodgy stuff right there. So I think to awaken yourself or to realize and to study these things, though, is an important step in trying to, kind of disarm the fear that people have for it. Because I think that the inherent kind of knee-jerk reactions that, you know, a lot of, you know, Christians and other people have to it in that sense is because they've cherry-picked a few certain items of it. And then they dismiss it out of hand and kind of chosen to just look the other way because, you know, it's too much for them and they're not interested. But at the same time, it means that they'll be controlled by it in the sense that they will always, you know, go in the opposite direction. If there's someone who happens to be a Freemason, for example, who talks about something that, nope, dismiss everything they say because they'll be lying and everything. And again, that's throwing out the baby with the bathwater, as you mentioned before.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's where it's at. I mean, I keep coming back to that as my grand point in all this. The overarching theme is I really believe that we need to reconnect, reactivate, re-stimulate the Western esoteric conscious aspect of our own psyche that has been shut down. That has been removed, that, you know, it's called like desacralization is a word that John Lash uses. The removal of the sacred from the everyday, you know, without the sacred in the everyday, we lose a greater meaning of reality, I think, because we're not, and I mean, I'm not trying to get all, you know, new agey here either. I'm just trying to say that I think that there is a simple level of consciousness that can be reached in the individual, which transcends the mundane. And that's something that is available to the minds that practice specific approaches to reality. And that's what I would say about this. And when I engage in the occult sciences or esoteric studies of symbolism and systems and this nature, it's my attempt to do just that, to exercise my own consciousness in a way that opens it up to these greater understandings. Because I believe in the Hermetic axiom, as above, so below. I believe that if we solve the mystery of the lesser reality within ourselves, we have a key to understanding the mystery of the greater reality of the universe.
Very good. There has been some discussion whether the Palladian rite exists or not. Obviously, Andrea Palladio and the architectural style exists, that so many powerhouses and symbolic powerhouses like the White House has been, you know, built according to, but the Palladian rite, have you been able to find anything more in terms of the validity that it's there and people are involved in it?
I have found no more proof than what's already been cited out there. I suspect that there's some truth to this order, though there is a lot of evidence that a man named Leo Taxil was involved in the invention of the degree. I'm not, or invention of the you know, rumor of the order. But I found just as much compelling evidence to say that it does exist and that Albert Pike was the Grand Master of it. So, I mean, it's an equal. I can't tell you. I have no greater evidence swaying it in one way or the other. But my feeling is that if the Palladium doesn't exist, which it probably doesn't because it's an order that we'll never know the name of, huh, Henrik?
Yeah.
The real one.
Right. Well, exactly. That's a problem. You know, it's kind of like sitting around talking about the Bilderberg meeting in a way that's like, yep, it's very important and it's, we should all be exposed. But what about all the groups that we do not know the names of or who's attending or, you know, that we never will find out? That's where the real, you know, kind of power base, if you will, is being run by. But again, you know, until there's more insiders who speak out about this, we will just be able to have what's available in the sources and we'll just have to keep on searching until that time. There is another aspect that has been unfolding in France when it comes to the war within Freemasonry. I don't know how much you've been accustomed to this or know how, but it's basically since 2009-10 maybe that the National Grand Lodge of France, the GLNF, is basically have been falling apart from the inside. In the last couple of years, I haven't heard that much about it, but it was specifically around 2011, there was some hoopla about this, that it was being basically abandoned by other you know, regular European Grand Lodges and everything else. Did you hear about this? Did you follow it? And do you think that it has any significance to what you've been talking about?
I have heard this. I can tell you that the Grand Lodge system of France has been endangered since almost its inception. It seems as if this is the focal point for controversy and, you know, corruption and misdealings and false claims and underhanded, you know, traditions going back and forth. I know that the orders that have risen up in France, there was first the Grand Lodge of France of the 18th century. Then there became the Grand Orient of France. For a while, the Council of Emperors of the East and West acted like the grand body in France. Then we had several different supreme councils of France, some of them simultaneously trying to control the country at the same time. So it's been an ongoing battle for authority in the mainland continental degrees in France. And that begs the question, what's going on in France? What's the big deal? Why all this trouble, you know, with regards to, and now as far as they're going under right now, that is a page straight out of the current playbook, as I would cite it. In America, Scottish Rite Valleys have been, for the last 150, 200 years, they have been making inroads into local community lodge systems, taking over the leadership, basically selling off all the assets and shutting down the lodges from within. A campaign of disempowering the autonomy of the local lodge system. I would say that this is a design to do just that, disempower the Masons of that area and make them have to travel further and be subordinate. Because what they do is they sell off the assets, sell off the buildings that the lodges will hold in concert together, and then purchase a piece of property and charge the orders rent, charge them all the other orders rent to pay to the Scottish Rite, for example, for lodge space. And they've basically, by the leadership being co-opted by agents of the Scottish Rite, they're able to convince the other members to go along with the deal, and then they sell off the properties, leave them with nothing in holdings, and make them be forced to rent. And then, you know, after a while, it just totally bankrupts their funds. They can't. In the local area that I first joined Freemasonry, they did exactly that. They had a temple building downtown that had been around since the 1901. They sold it off for a very low price, without any good reason to do that, and then moved into a rental space that they signed a 5-year lease on, $5,000 a year, and basically drained all the money till there was nothing left. And then the Scottish Rite bought a local piece of property, turned it into a lodge building, and now rent space to the other orders to come in. They're now completely at the mercy of the Scottish Rite. So that's a program, and it's been repeated. Oh, I've found it all across America, repeated over and over again.
It would this be, I mean, for example, what I've understood, what happened, for example, to the Fox Theater in Atlanta, One in LA too, the old Masonic temple there. I don't know if it was the, was it the Kodak Theater? It used to be a lodge before, and then they got rid of it, right?
Yes, it's the same thing there. And in Dallas, another huge Scottish Rite area, same thing there. Everywhere you look, and Detroit's another one. All the major cities of America once had giant lodge temples. And if you go back now, you'll find a great portion of them, especially in any of the areas where where there's been economic hardships, which a lot of these cities in America have had, you'll find the lodges have been sold and that the buildings are now if they haven't been sold yet, they're run down to almost inoperable, and they're about to be sold. I mean, I've found this, and I've had members of Grand Lodge systems from all over America contact me and report to me over and over again cases of this same kind of activity, as well as marginalization and targeting of individuals who would go against policies being laid down by members of the Scottish Rite in leadership roles in the local lodge areas.
Okay, this is very interesting then. So what is the future of the system as it exists now then? And where do you think this is ultimately going if we talk about, for example, you know, on the one hand, we have kind of the creation of a conspiracy culture, you know, wrapped within, you know, Masonry as being taking the hits for this. And I found it interesting that you mentioned, you know, potentially then even the outer perimeters of the Scottish Rite being part of this process that even maybe... I mean, because let's be honest about that. Anyone who opens up, you know, Moroccan dogma will understand that there's a conspiracy going on here. But at the same time, then we can question, all right, is that what the intention is? Is the eyes of the world intended to be focused on, you know, the Scottish Rite and Freemasonry as they've been involved in this process, or that they're responsible for this in some way? And at the same time, as you said earlier, that there you have a creation kind of a new age or a new religion kind of going on at the same time, revolving around this. But is there any way you can clarify that a little bit for us, or separate in terms of like, okay, what's happening in the official world, if you will, and if Freemasonry is being blamed for a lot of the problems in the world, and if that's true then, and also what's going on in terms of a new religion being created?
Well, a couple things. Number one, up until just recently, I think the 90s, the Scottish Rite Lodge of Research had a magazine they published called the Scottish Rite Magazine. Up until the 90s, it was called the New Age Magazine.
That's right. Yeah.
That's what it was called. That's just a little bit of an aside there. Okay. Let me tell you a story. This last February, I was invited to come to Reston, Virginia, which is right outside Washington, D.C., where the Masonic Week is held every year in February, where all the highest ranking appendant orders of Freemasonry in America come together and have a big convention. Everybody gets dressed up in tuxes, and it's like the Hyatt Regency, you know, the big chandeliers, and they have big keynote speakers and dinners and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they have exhibitions of rituals, and people advance through degrees and all that, and you meet all these big shots in the world of Freemasonry. I mean, these are the who's of Freemasonry. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the Secrets Inside Freemasonry shows that have been on like the History Channel and stuff. Yeah. They always interview the same few guys.
Oh, yeah.
Arturo de Hoya is one of them, and S. Brent Morris is the other one.
That's right.
S. Brent Morris wrote a book called The Complete Idiot's Guide to Freemasonry. That's the name of the book. The Complete Idiot's Guide to Freemasonry. Okay, and I met him personally at this Masonic Week. I couldn't resist, Henrik. I was there to be advanced to the next grade of the – I'm a member of the Masonic Order of Rosicrucians, which was created by the original members of the Golden Dawn in England back in the late 1800s and the Ancient Order of Druid members. So these are the guys that created this Society of Rosicrucians in America, which inherited its tradition from the Society of Rosicrucians of Anglica.
Amorc, or is that another?
No, Amorc is not a Masonic order.
Okay.
It's a non-Masonic order. This is the official Freemasonic version of Amorc.
I see. Okay.
And you can't be a member of AMORC and be a member of this one. You got to be one or the other. You can't be both.
Yeah.
And this one, the one I'm a member of, is one of those invitational bodies. You cannot apply for membership. You have to be invited. So it's not open to everybody. You have to be picked. And so I was invited to join because I was, you know, again, for the knowledge that I've gathered, and I impressed enough, you know, important people who are already there, and they brought me in, right? So then I was sent down to be advanced to the third order, which is the highest level so that I could be an officer in the college back in the local lodge area. It's all politics, right? So I go down to this big meeting to be advanced to the highest grade that I can be, and I'm standing there in the lobby waiting for we're all waiting to go into this room, and there's S. Brent Morris standing there, you know, and I can't resist. I'm standing there looking at the guy, and my mentors back home said, keep your head down, don't attract attention, don't engage anyone, don't tell them what you think, don't let them, you know, don't draw any attention to yourself and all this stuff, right? Because they know how I am, you know, I'm going to start talking and asking questions and I'm going to freak people out. So they just wanted to get me advanced and get out of there, right? So I couldn't resist. I walk over to S. Brent Morris and I just start chatting with him, you know. And, you know, introduce myself and da-da-da-da. We're talking away. You know, I've seen him on the History Channel a bunch of times. I've read that book, and I disagreed with the book. I found so many exceptions in the book, but I was being polite, and we're talking away, you know. And so then at some point I asked him, well, what are you working on nowadays, you know? And he says, oh, I'm working on this 16th century. He tells me a 16th century cipher, Masonic cipher from the Grand Lodge of England. Right away I'm like, wait a second. You're talking about the 1500s, 16th century. I mean, you in your book, you say that 1717 is the official beginning of Freemasonry.
Yeah.
So you're contradicting yourself. And he just gives me kind of a look, you know, like a sly look. And then I said, so what are you doing? What have you found? What's so exciting about this ritual? What's about the cipher? Now, a cipher it's a ritual that's been coded. And the way that they usually do it in America is there's just one letter that's one letter of the word. That's all you have is one letter to go on.
Yeah.
So you just have a series of one, it's called one letter ciphers. And nowadays they have like three letter where they have a letter and then several spaces like hangman and then another letter. So you can kind of figure out what the word is. But in the old days, they just had one letter. You had to know the ritual by heart. And then that one letter was your only indicator. So that's how these things were ciphered. Well, this cipher was unique. And I said, well, what's the difference? You know, and he said, well, this cipher is all sigil ciphers. And I said, really? So what do you mean? And he took, I had a notebook, and he took my notebook from me, and he drew a little cipher on my notebook, and it was basically a little block with several symbols that were overlaid on top. So that basically what he was telling me was that this cipher was constructed from several codes embedded within each other, creating a stacked sigil, almost like three-dimensionally off the page, in this strange configuration I've never, ever seen anywhere else. And it blew my mind. And I'm sitting there talking about it. I said, "What? This is amazing. Well, how did you figure all this out?" And he looked right at me without even missing a beat. He said, well, you know I'm in the CIA, right? I said, no. He said, yeah, I'm a member. I'm in the cryptography department. I'm a cryptographer for the CIA. I was like, wow, okay, now that explains it. So then I was kind of freaked out by that, naturally, and I walked away pretty soon after that, and I went home, and I was thinking about that, but I just kind of filed that. I get back to my hometown, and the Grand Lodge of the area I live in sends out a notice the next month or two that the Grand Lodge has decided to adopt S. Brent Morris's Complete Idiot's Guide to Freemasonry as their Masonic education curriculum. And this is an educational – this book I've already gone through is rife and filled with misinformation, and it's completely false. A lot of the things that I've talked about today with you are contradicted in this book. And this book is being accepted as the mainstream curriculum for an entire state in America, and it's not the only one. It's happening across the country. So when you ask what's going on in America right now, I would tell you that the Cold War persists. The secret war continues, and that they are stifling excellence and celebrating mediocrity in the form of co-option and counterfeiting of the truth.
So they are pulling out the, if you will, or taking out, squeezing out the knowledge that maybe once was within systems like these, and to maybe potentially coalesce it further at the top or to other orders. Because let's face it, if there's a lot of people involved in this, you have a lot of people who are being interested in their own. In their own education, you know, in their own spirituality, you basically do have, you know, although you have a lot of politics and other kind of crap going on in the lodge as well, but you know, if the main focus, then if that's the intent of the people joining it for nothing else, you do have a focus on yourself and your personal life, your spiritual, you know, being, and basically awakening that process, as you said, and ultimately, I feel that that's not what they want to have today in any capacity, and maybe they've lost control over Freemasonry because of the numbers, or they decided to use it for something else. And therefore, you know, as you're talking about this, I'm feeling that, okay, maybe they're just trying to take out that knowledge and kind of, as you say, kind of, you know, stupefy it and then basically keep it to themselves, right? As we've seen so many other times in history, that you take out the knowledge that you have and then you destroy that culture that had it, basically, correct?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the point I would make that you've just made, is that it's not happening isolated only within Freemasonry. This is across the board. This is the call of action across the board. Freemasonry is just another educational system, as I see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another degree program, not unlike a PhD program or a school of instruction or any other educational system that a person would sign up for. It's just that what we find in Freemasonry is a very clear example of the usurpation of real knowledge for fraudulent, counterfeited modifications. And what is the goal? What is the end result? It's the dumbing down of the populace. It's the false sense of, you know, let's put it this way, Henrik. If you're sitting in a room, you've been a Mason for 30 years, right? You know you don't know. You know you don't know. You don't know anything. You don't know what it's all about. You don't know. You have no answers to anything, right? But are you going to let anybody coming through that door today, new brother, looking at you like an old 30-year-old veteran, you've been here forever, are you going to let him know you don't know? No.
No.
Because nobody wants to admit they don't know. That's embarrassing. That's humiliating. Nobody wants to. Everyone knows they should know, and they don't know. So they're scared of being, you know, of being exposed. So what do? They do things like, they'll say, if you ask an older brother, what does this mean? He'll just say, oh, I can't tell you. I'd have to initiate you into another order. That's just too sick. That's the next level stuff or whatever. That's not true. They don't know, but they're just trying to, you know, brush it off, right? Huh. I mean, the fact of the matter is that if you don't know, you're not going to tell anybody you don't know. You're going to sit there and you're going to fear exposure. You know, you're gonna fear being exposed as the fraud you are. That's what's going on, is that these brothers are sitting around. It's like the emperor wears no clothes.
Right.
Nobody wants to be the first one to say the guy's walking around naked. You know what I mean? So they're all just going along with it because they don't want to be the one that draws attention to the fraud. You know.
Well, that's the story of planet Earth, though, isn't it? A lot of idiots running around think they know what they're doing and just kind of screwing up things further. It's like you get that in all parts of life and politics. But, you know, let's go back to that question. Does Brent Morrison know what he's doing? I mean, it's pretty significant if he just out of the blue kind of reveals to you that it's CIA. But what does that mean?
Yeah, well, when you said before about they take the knowledge out and keep it for themselves, I honestly believe that the House of the Temple 33rd in D.C. has some secrets that would be very interesting if they came to the light of day, that there's stuff there, that they have excised meaningful things out of the teachings within Freemasonry, meaningful things that would make a difference for the individual's progressive education. But again, let's reiterate, you know, we're coming up on the end of this thing. Let's reiterate this. I found nothing, and there is contained within Masonic ritual nothing that is exclusive to that ritual. You can find, and anyone can find, any of the knowledge they seek in many other places. It just so happens that these systems do have within them the remnants of systems of knowledge and wisdom. And it is there if you know where to look. But it is so obfuscated by the traditions that are the false traditions and the misunderstandings that surround the system, and the probably deliberate usurpations that are the entire system is under the throes of, that it prevents the individual from properly assimilating or taking on board the knowledge that's there, because you get so diverted by everything else.
Trying to make it look harmless to the outside world seems to be one of the agendas of Freemasonry, and then internally then try to pose with more authority to all the other, you know, brothers, if you will, within the lodge than they actually do have. But at the same time, then you have a coalescing of the true knowledge to the top, or taking it out of that. Are we at a time right now where basically there isn't need for any of these systems? And people have argued in the past, and, you know, I guess I might have, you know, agreed with that, with considering to the, you know, the story of the Vatican and the church and everything else of, you know, going after people who did have a certain amount of knowledge. I mean, the Dark Ages is basically like a rebooting of, you know, civilization, at least in Europe. You know, you kill everything off and anything that has any kind of understanding about the natural world, and then you just you shatter it, and then you build it up anew and start to kind of lay down the system as you see it fit to be able to control people. That's what I see has happened. But are we at a time right now, Freddie, where basically we don't need a system or any kind of lodge to be able to perpetuate, I guess, the knowledge that ultimately people are seeking within these kinds of orders? What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that we are reaching a time. I think that knowledge ebbs and flows with the development of humanity. It ebbs and flows. There are times when knowledge is available to everyone, and then there are times when it retracts, like the Dark Ages is an example, or the Inquisition, or, some sort of climatic upheavals. There are different times in which knowledge retracts and is like held sequestered and cloistered away from humanity. But that's gone on for too long now. I think we are at a time when, and this is one of the reasons why I will inevitably probably eventually withdraw from all the orders of Freemasonry, because in the end, they're extremely patriarchal and one-sided in that sense. My understanding of human nature is that the sacred feminine has been suppressed, and that is part of the disempowering program that's been instilled upon us as a species. Therefore, the only way to really overcome this is to restore the sacred feminine. And the restoring of the sacred feminine is a balance between the sexes, male and female. And the lodge system is an imbalanced approach to spirituality because it excludes females. And so, yeah. The fact of the matter is that in our modern time, this knowledge needs to be available to women as much as men. And therefore, we have come into a time, I think, where the doors need to be thrown open, the books need to be pulled out, brought into the light, blow the dust off them, and the truth needs to be heard.
What about Masonry being kind of a secret goddess worship cult, that's what it's really about? And if so, if that's any truth in that, how would you explain the exclusions of women? What was the reason for that?
Well, I think that, once again, all the virtues that are depicted within the lodge ritual are represented by feminine form. That in and of itself is telling. Wisdom, beauty, strength, all represented by females. In the emblems of the lodge. So, that's very telling to me. That points out to you that the emphasis is placed upon. See, human consciousness, we seek the sacred feminine. We want to sync up with the vibrations of, male and female, but the sacred feminine is a strong creative force, I think, in our psyche for obvious reasons. And this need will be fulfilled one way or another. And those that are in power, those that sculpt our awareness, know this. So instead of letting us have full access to the sacred feminine, what I think is done instead is it is usurped, defiled, and then represented to us in a defiled form, like the objectification of women in media. Or, all the different various ways.
Even the violent feminist movements and the Marxist feminist movements, that's all that's what I see that is about. It's about creating the conflict between men and women to disengage, the marriage, if you will, the true balance there.
Right. And so, having said that, I mean, this is how it is represented to us to satisfy our need to connect to the feminine, but in such a way that it creates a discordant dystopian type effect, or reality for us, because it's de-emphasized and defiled, like twisted. The feminine's been twisted and presented in such a way that is not fulfilling to us, and I think in our psyche. But it's feeding a need, whether it's fulfilling or not. It's feeding a need. And so in our, with the lodge about it being a secret goddess religion, I don't know. I'm sure that there are those. I mean, some could accuse me of operating in that way inside of a lodge system because I'm very goddess-oriented in my approach to spirituality. So, and I recognize all those things right away inside the lodge. So if it is there, it's like kind of inconsequential almost. It's like in spite of what's going on, that may be occurring. But I would not, from my perspective, call it innocuous or malevolent in any way.
But even Masonry is changing in that regard right now, though. You have the Order of the Eastern Star. You have, Prince Hall Masonry. You have more an acceptance level of everyone, right? But at the same time, I mean, I've always argued if they wanted to have a couple of guys wanted to have their own club. I mean, now it's bigger than that as a political movement. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like why can't they have that if they wanted to do that anyway? It's kind of, you know, I've never understood this idea that you have to have other people have to force their way into something, even though, you know, if they're not welcomed or whatever. I mean, that's unfortunate, but why would they want to be part of that if they're not welcomed anyway? Do you see what I mean? It's kind of weird, huh?
Yeah. Yep. It is. I mean, there's a lot of, as far as Prince Hall and Order of Eastern Star, you got to keep in mind, they have been around since the 18th century.
Yeah. I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's definitely something that's been allowed per se. But, you know, in the same sense, there are lodge systems in America right now that don't recognize Prince Hall Masons in General Lodge.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So it's still the same problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to wrap things up here in a little bit. I know we have to run Frutter, but this has been really interesting, really good stuff. And I would like to suggest to you that we do have you back on the program at some time and actually focus specifically on the Secret War on Human Consciousness. I think there's a lot more, you know, that we could say about that and tie in here. You did a great article for Paranoia Magazine a while back that I, you know, went through, but unfortunately we didn't have time to go into that today. So maybe we can have the opportunity to do that at another time, Frater. But please give us some of the details again of where people can kind of hook up with you, get some of your other material, and of course remind us again when you think that the book on the secret war within Freemasonry is going to be out.
Yeah, great. Henrik, listen, I would love to come back on and discuss the secret war on human consciousness as a part two, because we've basically talked about the war inside Freemasonry. And, you know, the article hasn't been published yet for Paranoia. It's coming out in the winter issue, too.
Oh, okay.
So winter is the big time for me as far as publications go. So anybody interested, paranoiamagazine.com. You can also find them on Facebook. And keep updated on when the articles are coming out. Freeman and Jamie have both been published and will be published in future issues of Paranoia Magazine as well. My website is middlechamberfx.wordpress.com. I also have a blog called freighterx.blogspot.com. And you can also go to the AmericanFreedomRadio.com, which is American Freedom Radio Network, and check out the Middle Chamber Archives, which is my show, which is, I've gone into hiatus, but we have 3 years of archives there with great guests. A lot of them you've talked to, Henrik. So anyways, you can basically reach me. There's contact information on that website, and just keep checking out FreemanTV.com. We're going to be, like I said, we're going to be working on this new show for the People's Voice Network with David Icke. We're really excited. That's going to be launching. Our show is going to be launching in November. TheSyncBook.com. That's the website for the secret war inside Freemasonry for anybody who wants to check that out.
All right. Well, thanks for your time today. Nice having you with us. Finally, great to hear from you and of course, the research that you've done and your perspective. And it's always good to tie more people and more knowledge into the path of discovery that we're all on. So we do appreciate it. Thank you so much, Frater.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been an amazing thrill to be on the show, and I look forward to our future conversations.
And we have coming up on Red Ice Radio, Suzanne Venker on the War on Men. On Radio 314, we have Anna Maria and Brian Clement on Toxic Clothing. That's a very interesting program, stuff you never knew about, regarding the clothes that you wear every day and the toxic chemicals that the fabrics have been treated with. After this, Bill Still, Joseph Atwill, and Ryan Gilmore. We also have another big roundtable on past and future coming up. And after this, we have Charles Eisenstein and Anthony Peake, to name a few. My thanks to Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and John. Also a warm and a special thanks to all our members out there for staying with us. Keep up the good fight, my friends. Keep searching, keep questioning. And we will talk to you in just a few days.